I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country.
Potential terror attack thwarted by the FBI. WWJ's Charlie Langton is joining us live with reaction. Charlie.
FBI stopped a potential terrorist plot right here in Michigan that was to take place over this Halloween weekend. Now, multiple agents made their way by the FBI and the state police. They were in Dearborn and Inkster this morning, assisting apparently in arrests. And we know that multiple arrests have been made by the FBI at multiple homes this morning.
I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Terror on what has become one of America's favorite holidays, Halloween. Here's what we know. Four senior law enforcement officials familiar with the case told NBC News the FBI in Detroit apprehended a group of young individuals who were plotting some form of attack with a possible reference to Halloween. Those officials say the group was tied to foreign extremism, but did not say if it was ISIS, Al-Qaeda, or something else. We know the raid was carried out in Dearborn, an inner ring suburb just outside the city of Detroit. Dearborn has the largest Muslim population per capita in the United States, with recent surveys indicating approximately 55% of its residents identify as Arab or North African. Officials did say there is no current threat to the public.
Local members of Congress are reacting. Debbie Dingell says that she is grateful for the work of the FBI and that we hope to learn more details later in this plot. Also, Congresswoman Lisa McClain thanking the FBI for their work as well. Again, there was to be a plot, but it's been stopped by the FBI, a terrorist plot here in Michigan.
So, we're safe, at least from that plot. But there are other things to be concerned about on a Halloween Friday, too. Here's WWJ with more.
Sheriff, is there a database where parents can actually go to check this before heading out into the neighborhood?
Yes, the SARS database is the Sex Offender Registry. Actually, it was created, as you know, I've been in law enforcement a long time. But in the middle of my career, I was a state senator, and I actually wrote the Sex Offender Registry Act. And it allows people to go and look on that website for people that live in their neighborhood or live in the area where they may be, if you're a single woman, jogging, for convicted sex offenders. And so we encourage people to look at that list regularly, but especially before kids go out for Halloween. I wouldn't suggest they not go to a house that has a convicted sex offender at it for candy or any kind of Halloween activity.
So how much of a concern is it for you and your department?
Well, we know statistically that sex offenders, especially sex offenders, pedophiles of young children, are very recidivist prone. They have a high recidivism rate. So it's a big concern that any opportunity for someone that's a pedophile to be around in the proximity to try to lure or attract a child is a concern. So that's why we encourage information is power. Power allows you to make decisions about where you or your kids go on trick-or-treating night or any night for that matter.
You know, speaking of safety on Halloween, how much more safety concern is there when Halloween falls on a Friday compared to the middle of the week?
Well, for me, it also brings in the traffic concerns and other kinds of things. You know, a lot more activities going on a Friday night than a weeknight. And one of the biggest concerns about Halloween, especially if it's not a full moon night and a lot of ambient light, is these costumes sometimes are dark and they're not reflective. And with a mask, it reduces their visibility. So one of the concerns is traffic accidents, a kid getting hit by the car if they dart across the street to go to the other side of the block to trick or treat. So that's another thing we encourage parents to do is, you know, monitor their kids, talk to their kids, put reflective tape on their backs and try to limit the visibility obstruction that happens from a mask. Carry flashlights so they're visible as they're walking. Keep a cell phone with you. Do, you know, some common sense safety tips.
You know, we've had a couple of stories this week kind of warning parents to always check their kids' candy because there could be some drugs that are put in the candy and, you know, just be aware of all of that. But, you know, how often do you actually see that happen where someone might look into the candy they've been given out and it turns out to be something like that?
We don't see it a lot, but, you know, one time can be very bad. So actually, there was a recent case in Oakland County where they found some candy that they believe was adulterated with some drugs or had some, you know, potential gummies mixed into it. So it's something you need to stay tuned to. You need to be aware of what we suggest. And I suggest, I used to do this when I was, a person with young kids. My wife and I would, you know, go with our kids. And when we got home, we'd have them dump everything out. And make it a fun thing for them. Let them sort it on the floor and say, geez, I got 3 Reese's Pieces and I got, you know, 2 Snickers, and let them sort it out and count it. And it's kind of a fun thing, but that allows you as the parent to look at every piece of candy, every packaging, make sure it's not been tampered with, open, no homemade food is in there. Just kind of give it a good look over. And if you want, and I used to do this, you can give them a government lesson and say, okay, now the government's here. You went out and did all the work to collect the candy. I'm going to take a 15% tax on those sticker bars.
You got to take the dad tax.
Yeah, exactly.
Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard joining us on WWJ.
What happens when Halloween falls on a Friday, and so does a high school championship game in one small town? They decide to move All Hallows' Eve to a more convenient day. Here's more.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The City Commission recently at their past meeting made a decision to change the date of Halloween from Friday night to the next night, Saturday night. That type of activity has occurred before whenever the local football team has been involved in the state playoffs.
And I think I read the last time was 2014, somewhere around there?
I don't recall the exact date the last time it occurred, but it has occurred before. And obviously, this isn't a mandate, but it gives the people an opportunity to both trick-or-treat one day or both days, or attend the football game and then enjoy the next night with the kids that could have went trick-or-treating but were involved in the football game. Marine City is a big football town, especially local high school football, the big supporters. So this is an event to try to support the local team, but also make sure they don't miss out on the event of Halloween.
See, I was going to ask about how much football means to the community, because I coach at Lakeshore High School volleyball, and we do play Marine City. You guys are also 10-0 in volleyball, which is amazing. And it seems like you guys are just love your sports at that high school.
They really do. They're very supportive of the local high school. You'll see it's like a Friday night lights event. The whole town turns out for these events to cheer on their local team. And obviously, people have a choice. They can do Friday night. They could do Saturday night. They could do both nights. In the past, when they did move it, it actually rained torrential rains on Friday night. So Saturday night turned out to be a better option. But we would encourage people to make their own decisions. But for this purpose, we're supporting our local football team.
I've seen a lot of comments, obviously, from both sides. People who, you know, support it, people who don't like it, and people who say, well, I'm just going to hand out candy both nights. What would you say to those people who are really just against moving Halloween?
What I would suggest to them is celebrate on Friday night. It's not something that's mandatory or, under the color of law. It's an option. And we're trying to make that option available. I think it benefits the both sides. If one side wants to be traditional and have it on Friday night, that's great. Appreciate it. Hand out candy. The same thing for the people on Saturday. Hand out candy. There will be some family members that will go both Friday and Saturday. kudos to them as well. It's a choice. But we are trying to it is a football town, and the town tends to empty out when the games are on so they can attend. We're trying to honor that and support our local team.
And if we're talking specifically about the football team, it's probably good for the school and the city, too. Obviously, you have Clawson coming. It's going to be Clawson parents, Clawson students. Concessions are going to be open. Talk about what this, what at least monetary thing this does for the school.
Well, obviously, for all schools, playoffs are always the goal, right? And then how far they can advance in the playoffs. So we're ardent supporters of the local football team, and we hope they go very far in the playoffs this year. They've had a great season, and it means a lot to the town. All these kids live in this area, the city, or the adjoining areas, and it's an important process in their community mind. These people think football really 12 months a year. So if they're not playing in games, they're not in the playoffs, they're preparing for the next season.
Choosing football over candy, at least on Friday, that's a decision everyone is free to make for themselves. But here's one that can bring judgment from everyone around you. How old is too old to trick or treat? Join the discussion on The Mark Cox Show.
Well, I will steal lots of children's candy tonight from my own grandkids, by the way. Let me be clear about that. I'm not going to run down the street and snag candy out of the bags of children.
It'd be better if you did.
I've already cleared it with my grandson. I'm like, can your papa have some of your candy tonight? And he seemed okay with that. He looked at me at first, and then he seemed okay with that. So we're fine. It's all going to be good. It's going to be decent weather, so the kids aren't dying in those thick costumes. Remember back in the day when they parents would, yeah, you make your own costume, right? You wrap yourself in a sheet and you're a ghost, and then you're shivering out there because all you wore was a T-shirt under it, and nobody warned you it was going to be 40 degrees before the night was over. Those were the days, weren't they? We would just leave. I don't know about you, Scott. We would leave. I lived in a fairly rural street during my formative years from probably second grade up until sixth grade. And when we would go trick-or-treating, we had to make about a mile and a half loop probably with this big road that went in a big, so almost in a square, but it was long. And the houses were spread out. So we would have to go, we'd have to pretty much run as a kid. You know, you're excited to get to the next house. You'd run from house to house. But parents had no idea what the hell we were. This is so different than it would like you today. The thought, if you have a teenager, you'd probably you're letting them go out by themselves tonight. But I mean, I was 8, 9, 10 years old with a pack of kids. Just off we went.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom and dad probably sitting home on the porch drinking a cocktail.
Right.
You know, handing out candy.
I remember being driven to an area where the houses were close together. So that was one thing I recall. You know, I've noticed the age of some of the trick-or-treaters, I'm like, kid, you're a little old to be doing this, you know?
I had that thought the other day. I heard somebody talking about this, and I thought, how do I feel? Like, what's the age cutoff that you feel comfortable handing candy to a kid? If I see some kids that I know darn good and well are probably juniors in high school, sophomores, juniors, I'm thinking that's a little too old. Yeah. And then somebody put up a meme, which I thought kind of hit home, that said, listen, if a teenager's walking around your neighborhood getting candy, they're not out causing other problems or getting in some other mess.
Yeah.
So give them a piece of candy and just let them go on. Right?
I didn't think about it that way, but that's good.
At least they're putting putting candy in their system and not weed or something like that. Well, they may do that later. I don't know. They may do that later. Who knows? But you can do that for them. That's fine.
Whether you're chasing kids around, sitting under Friday night lights, or enjoying a porch cocktail, we have one bit of advice. Look up. Here's Tommy Tucker on WWL Radio with What You'll See in the Sky.
So when it comes to Halloween, you know, you can look at things supernatural one way or the other. It can be either like a serial killer or a horror thing, or it can be something from outer space. We couldn't find a serial killer to come on, so we decided to go with Dr. Jillian Scudder, our friend, associate professor of physics and astronomy at Oberlin College and an author of three books on astronomy for the general public. Good morning, Dr. Scudder. How are you? Has anything ever unworldly or anything that can't be explained by science or physics ever happened to you?
To me?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
There's plenty of things that have happened to me that I don't understand, but that doesn't mean that science can't explain them. I just don't know. I mean, yeah, it's just, I find all sorts of things really interesting. My general response is not
What about coincidences? Any kind of coincidences where you're thinking about somebody and they call, but then do you realize as a scientist, well, you know what, I've actually thought about 15,000 people, but this is the only one that I thought of that called, so therefore I'm thinking that's the one I remember?
There is a bit of confirmation bias in a lot of those mm-hmm. things where you're like thinking about something and then it happens and you go, oh, yeah, there it is. And so that's an easy way of like remembering things because it sticks in your brain a little bit better.
Right.
But in general, if there's something that happens to me and I don't understand it, my response is to go learn about it because I'm curious.
Well, that makes you the scientist that you are, doesn't it?
It does. It also gives me a bunch of weird facts.
Like what? Give me some weird facts.
Some weird facts?
Yeah.
I think one that I ran into recently was, well, that surprised a student of mine recently, was the moon smelling like gunpowder. We talked about this one probably a little while ago, but it came back up recently.
The moon smells like gunpowder.
Yes. We're talking about misconceptions that people might have, and mm-hmm. we think of the moon as being made of rock, and
right.
it mostly is. And we don't think of rocks smelling of anything. And we also don't think about the moon smelling of anything. But the moon is actually quite dusty. And so when the astronauts came back in from their moonwalks, they were covered in dust. And so when it was saved, when they sealed the spacecraft back off and put the air back in, then the air inside the craft, it gets all dusty from the moon dust.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the Apollo astronauts reported that the dust smelled like gunpowder.
Hmm. Was that because of the chemical composition of gunpowder or something that's in gunpowder that it was also on the moon? I guess they've analyzed
It's actually really unclear why it smelled like gunpowder because the samples that they brought back, the moon dust was so sharp that it cut the sample bags and air got into them. So by the time they made the three-day trip back, they kind of lost their smell. And so we're not quite sure why it smells like gunpowder. But
sharp,
it's an interesting thing to know.
Sharp dust, you say?
It's sharp, yeah. So the rocks, the dust is there because the rocks have been hit by lots of small meteorites.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just fractured rock. And on Earth, our dust is not usually particularly sharp because there's erosion and things tumble against each other. But on the moon, there's not really a lot of wind because there's mm-hmm. no atmosphere. So there's no reason for the dust to tumble and polish itself down. So instead, it just stays sharp and jagged. And so when you put that into a little plastic baggie, you're likely to rip the bag.
When you say rock, are you talking yes. about granite or what kind of rock? Or is this just stuff from a planetary explosion from years back from a burned out star? And I don't want to hurt myself using these words, but help me out.
So the rock of the moon is a combination of things. Some of it is the results of the formation of the moon, which came from a big collision between an object about the size of Mars and the proto-Earth back in the very, very early solar system. And so some of it is from that era, but a lot of it is volcanic because there was volcanic activity on the moon for quite a long time. And so we have like basalt, which is a volcanic rock. In a lot of the places that we landed Apollo missions. So not everywhere on the moon is volcanic, but where we tended to send people because it was nice and flat in those places, a lot of the rock is volcanic in nature.
So what can we learn by going back to the moon? Seriously.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of technological challenges that we have to get through in order to get to the moon. And so there's a lot of sort of challenges of how do we get human bodies through any short trip in space safely. And so there's a lot of learning that happens there. There's also a lot of learning that can happen just about what how the moon evolved over time. When I was learning about the lunar volcanoes, I was reading all these planetary science papers, and a whole bunch of them had a sentiment along the lines of, man, it would be cool if we could get rocks from right here. Mm-hmm. But we only have so many samples, and they're from a very biased selection. So going back might let us get more interesting rocks. But I think most of the, like the bulk of what we're going to learn is how to protect the human body in space and how to do that sustainably.
What could we learn? What could we learn if we were to bring back more rocks from the moon, I guess? Is there anything, is it possible that underneath, and I'm not trying to be stupid here because I can be stupid without trying, but is there anything to be learned? Like, I don't know how much dust there is. You know, if you sweep it away on them, it's all dust. I'm not trying to be stupid, but is there any way that we know what the core of the moon is made up? Have we ever done any drilling or any kind of sampling or anything?
There's not been any drilling, but we do have an estimate of what the moon's core is like, because what we do have is we put seismometers on the moon, which measure earthquakes usually.
Okay.
But on the moon, they measure moonquakes. And so the way that earthquakes or moonquakes move through the moon tells us about the interior structure. This is how we know about the core of the Earth as well. We haven't drilled to the core of the Earth, but we know what the structure of the Earth is like because we can watch how earthquakes bounce off of different layers and travel through different layers and go, oh, okay, there must be an inner core and then an outer core and then a mantle layer. So we've done similar things on the moon. So we have an idea, but a lot of those were placed quite a long time ago. And our monitoring could be improved if we had new technology on the moon.
You know,
we could get a better idea of what it would look like or what it might be doing.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. We look at it every night and sometimes during the day, and we just take it for granted. We don't even know where it came.
Yeah.
Where did it come from? Where did the moon come from?
It came out of an event that we call the Great Impact. So this is an event that occurred very, very early in the solar system when the planets were still forming.
About like 1930, 32?
Is that what you consider ancient times?
Yeah. No, really, when? How long ago?
This would be like 4 and change billion years ago.
Okay.
So the planets were starting to form, but not fully formed yet. Mm-hmm. And an object about the size of Mars, which we've given it a name called Theia, mm-hmm. and it would have been, so about a third the size of our current Earth, hit our Earth and caused a huge mass. And so huge amounts of the surface.
Did you say mess or mass?
A mess, which will condense down into a mass,
okay.
Which is eventually the moon. So it shreds the outer layer of our planet, the core of the Theia object, and the core of our Earth combine. But the rest of it kind of mixes together, and some of it stays out in orbit, and that becomes our moon. And so one of the reasons we think this is because when we looked at the composition of the rocks of the moon and the composition of rocks on the Earth, they're almost identical. And
so the moon came from the Earth. I had no idea of this. And,
yeah,
I'm almost 40 years old.
So we, through a massive impact, created the moon out of a mix of what was Earth rock and this Theia rock. And so they have to be almost identical in that way. And it was one of the big hints that, yeah, we have a similar origin, is because otherwise the moon could be made of different materials. Mm-hmm. And then we could go, oh, well, maybe it was a free wandering object and we just caught it.
Maybe there'd be something on it that we could use to maybe power a perpetual energy machine.
Maybe there'd be something interesting happening there. Yeah.
So let me ask you this.
It could be metal or whatever.
If I were to cut the moon in half and look at it in cross-section, what would it look like?
You would have a thin layer of crust, like the Earth has. Mm-hmm. And then you would have a very cold, thick layer that is basically a cooled version of our own mantle. But that would go most of the way in, like quarters, 80% of the way in.
Like when you say cooled, you're talking about
temperature.
No, yeah. I know that, but I mean, like, what temperature would you...
I don't know offhand. I'm thinking like it it's not warm enough to be melted or moving in any capacity.
All right.
So it's maybe not touchable the deeper you go, but it will be close to the surface. And then at the very, very core, we think there is a piece of the moon, the core, that is still warm. And so that you shouldn't touch. But exactly what that looks like is something that we're still figuring out. So we think there's probably a solid core, a little bit like our own solid core, and then a very, very thin layer that is melted. But that's a very small bit. So you'd have a bright piece in the middle that would be leaking out, having cut the Earth and moon in cut the moon in half. But the rest of it would just be solid rock.
What does it smell like? Raspberry? Mars smells like raspberry?
The Milky Way.
Milky Way smells like raspberry. That's what it is. So let's talk about the Three-Eye Comet. What is a comet to begin with, and what is the Three-Eye Atlas?
Sure. So a comet is a mixture of ice and dirt and dust and other material that usually hangs out within our solar system, very, very far away from the sun, where it's so cold that the ice is basically frozen solid. And occasionally...
Let me interrupt for a second. Would this be akin to a big, giant glacier moving through space, or not really?
Yeah, kind of, except much dirtier.
Okay.
So a glacier is much cleaner, much more ice than a comet is, because comets are actually so mixed in with other material that they're quite dark. They're about the same darkness as black velvet.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a comet with Elvis painted on it?
I have not.
Okay. That'd be something, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. Very impressive. So they look bright in the sky. Oh, you're fine. They look bright in the sky because sometimes when they come into the inner solar system, they start warming up, and then the ice starts to evaporate, and then that evaporated ice turns into a gas, and then that reflects light. And so we see the reflected light of the evaporating gas and dust, and that's why they look bright. But if you were actually up close next to one, they would be the comet itself, the nucleus of it, is very, very dark.
So how dense?
How, all sorts of other things.
How dense is it? Are we looking at something that is miles wide and composed of individual pieces that we perceive it to be one solid piece, or is it a bunch of different thousands and thousands of pieces that are just so far away that they appear to be one piece?
They're actually, at least the ones that we've gone to go visit, which are not so many, kind of one coherent chunk of ice and dust mixed together. So it is not a rubble situation, but they can break apart as they come closer to the sun. But they're kind of irregular blobs of ice and bits of rock held together. So they are kind of glued together by the ice. But they're not that big. They're sort of 50, 100 meters in some cases. Mm-hmm. But they don't tend to get miles across. They do tend to get, you know, 100 meters, something like that. But not enormous. It's just that they, when they start evaporating, they become, the tails of their evaporated gas do become large. And then that's usually what is most visible.
Not melt, but evaporate.
Yes.
Or is there a difference? Yes.
Well, so melting implies that it's going into a water-based state, and evaporating is turning straight into a gas. So we can, because of the temperatures involved of being in sunlight, there's so much heat there that the ice will do what we call sublimate and go straight from solid to gas, and not really go through a melted, watery phase. And then the gas is free to depart the body of the comet, and that's what we see as a tail.
So the gas is of no harm to anybody, right?
Nope, it's just hanging out in space.
So tell me the difference
between... And the dust is also not really of any harm to anybody, but it can give us interesting meteor showers.
All right, tell me about the comet and an asteroid difference.
So asteroids are mostly rocks, and comets are largely ice, is the main distinction that we have.
Which goes to gas, but the rock stays rock.
The rock will stay rock.
Okay.
So we will. It will. What it will do as you bring a comet in close to the sun is you evaporate away all of the ice, and then the little pieces of rock and dirt and stuff will wind up getting loosed away. And so those get left behind in this little trail. So if you see these like Dennis the Menace kind of trails of where he's been, comets kind of do the same thing with their dust and small bits of rock.
So as far as dangers to the Earth, a comet would never be a danger, would it? Or could it be?
I mean, the only situation in which a comet would really be dangerous is if it hit us directly. And then that would be a problem. But that's a problem no matter what is hitting us. And the odds of that are incredibly low.
Are the odds better for, not better, but what are the greater odds, for, even though they're very small, of a comet or a asteroid hitting us?
I think we're more concerned with the odds of an asteroid hitting. Not so much because it would be less damaging per se, but large asteroids, you can get quite large asteroids, and those are very destructive. And then large comets are a little bit more uncommon, and they also start evaporating before they get to us, and they're also less like just comets coming into the inner solar system is less of a common phenomenon. Whereas we know there's a whole asteroid belt full of rocks hanging out, and so that's much closer to us, and so the asteroids are kind of a bigger hazard. Generally speaking.
So where do we stand with what have we learned in the last year or two about space?
All sorts of things. I mean, if you want to stick on the comet theme, the interstellar comets are not so uncommon is an interesting thing that we have learned. The very first interstellar comet was found in 2017, I think, 2019. And since then, we've found three, which is a lot for objects coming through our solar system, which is not so big. So that's pretty cool because it tells us that we should be able to spot more of them if we start being able to look for them more carefully.
Will you be dressing up for Halloween today?
I am dressed up for Halloween today, yes.
As?
I have a circle skirt that I have embroidered with the northern celestial hemisphere, so all of the stars that can be seen by eye are accurate in both size and position on my skirt. So I am the night sky today.
Are you wearing that as well? Are you wearing that too? That's two of us.
No. Well, good job on your embroidery.
Thank you. It took a while, but I'm going to tell you
what. You had so many skills.
It is dead on accurate. I can guarantee you that.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.